So the question was, how would you fix the world? And 20% of people said, well, fix the authorities. Yeah. And what we're going to do now is listen to what Jesus says, not what I have to say, and be warned up front, because Jesus not only speaks in a really profound way, but he actually speaks in a way that can confront us as well. He often says things that are totally unexpected, that you wouldn't have thought he would say, and so we'll probably find that this morning. Now, the problem is obvious, isn't it? We live on the corruption coast. Now, you look at politics in our region, and it doesn't have a great track record. Cover-ups, scandals, visits to different establishments, mismanagement. As the AC keeps rolling, not just on the coast but across our country, we just find that there's deeper and deeper corruption and uncovering dirt. And it's not just governments either, is it? Not just our government, but all governments across our world. In fact, if you look at our governments in Australia, they're quite tame by comparison to other places in the world. Our police force, you go to some places and corruption is just part of the course. You just have to pay for whatever you want to get done, wherever you want to go. And so in some ways, you look at our country and it's better than most. It's not just political authority where we see problems with authority. It's religious authority as well, and we're going to spend a whole week on religion next week, I believe it is. Military authority, all manner of authority. Pretty much anywhere you go where people are in charge of other people, you seem to get people abusing their authority and using it for their own good and their own ends and forgetting about the people they're supposed to be caring for and looking after and protecting and doing good towards. So on one end of the spectrum, you see it in incredibly despotic, evil regimes, the rules of people like Stalin, Hitler, Pol Pot, those sort of things. Somewhere in the middle, you see it in terms of just corruption, self-serving rule, where it's all about those in power. And at the very other end of the spectrum, you have good-intentioned, well-meaning leaders who are trying to do their best but end up often being ineffectual, inefficient, impotent. Or there's a real mix often of these, isn't there? Sometimes you see in authority some really good things, some really admirable things, and yet mixed up in there, there's some really terrible things, some really shocking things, and in the end it just leaves a bad taste in our mouth. Now, it's not just at a national level either. It does happen at a national level, but I don't know if you've been part of any sporting organisation or any community organisation where people come to be in charge. Well, what you see there is a real mix. You see people giving their time, giving their energy, and doing great things for the community. But mixed up in that voluntary service is those in charge getting the best deal for their kid, influencing the system for their friends, making sure that they have the positions in the top rungs of the organisation because it gives them respect and influence. And pretty much any place you get people in charge of other people, you get problems. I recently read the Divergent series, Divergent Insurgent Allegiant, there you go, teen fiction. If you haven't, you might have seen the movie Divergent. That's the best one, so just read that book, don't read the other two. But one of the big themes that runs through the book is it doesn't matter who gets in charge, does it? I've got a teenager, so it doesn't matter who gets in charge, it doesn't matter what form of government or what group rules, they muck it all up. They eventually become corrupt, resistance breaks out towards them and they ultimately crush that resistance. They become self-seeking and with their own power, they ultimately crush and oppress those who try to resist. Whether it's erudite or the factionless or the genetically pure or the genetically impure or defective, whoever gets power uses it for their own ends and their own good and does harm to others. I had a history teacher back in high school, Mr. Jacobs, if you're listening, I hope you're well. He would say almost every lesson, sometimes twice a lesson, the well-known quote from Lord Acton, which is, power corrupts, how's it go? Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Now that is why we love democracy, isn't it? Because we limit the amount of power that any one person can actually wield at any particular time. Democracy is one of those forms of government which is incredibly safe and incredibly inefficient. And so we love it because it's safe, because it's built on the understanding that people are flawed, which we looked at last week. And so when people get power, they tend to corrupt things and ruin things. And so if one person wields ultimate power, or a small group has ultimate power, they're to be very feared. And so democracy puts in place all sorts of checks and balances and voting systems. And so if we don't like what's happening, we can get rid of them. And there's an opposing party who we can vote in and who opposes this decision. There's all sorts of checks and balances, which basically means it's very, very hard to get anything done in government. And any time you think there's something really, really good to do, you know that someone's going to oppose you, and so it's actually very hard to push that really good thing through. And so it's inefficient, but it's very, very safe, because it means you don't have dictatorships or oligarchies, or the power is distributed, and there's all sorts of checks and balances. Whereas on the other hand, an autocracy, a kingship, some sort of dictatorship, well, the weakness is all the power is in the hands of one person. The strength is all the power is in the hands of one person. So very efficient, very effective. You look at the rules of people like Julius Caesar, the dictator for life, Sulla, this is Roman history, Augustus Caesar, they got a lot done. Yeah, really did some amazing things, did some really terrible things too. And so it's a very scary thing when all the power is in the hands of a few. Now, there are some very impressive leaders, leaders who do great good, but even as they do great good, they have great flaws and there are great problems. And so we've got to remember the best of people are people at best. They often lack wisdom, they often make mistakes. Sometimes you get the outstanding mixed with the corrupt at the same time. So what's the answer? Well, 20% of people said we've got to fix it. We've got to fix authority. And then you've got to go, well, what do they mean by that? What do you mean by fix authority? I can think of two answers, and I might have totally missed it, but these are the two I can think of, two things they mean by it. One is get rid of bad authority and replace it with good authority. The other is get rid of authority altogether. We don't need anyone in charge. So they're the two things that I'm going to deal with. So the first one is get rid of bad authority and replace it with good authority, which sounds really good, doesn't it? But my big question is that actually possible? Because when you talk about replacing bad authority with good authority, what you're really talking about is replacing bad people with good people, or flawed people with unflawed people. And if you're with us last week, what we looked at was this very topic. And one of the things that's commonly denied in our society, but is really an irrefutable truth, is that people are fundamentally flawed. There's a problem within each and every one of us. All of us are broken. All of us have a serious problem. And so while we are capable of great good, we're at the same time capable of great bad, and we keep succumbing to it. We keep sort of sliding down in that sort of direction towards the wrong, towards the selfish, towards the immoral. Now, last week we looked at the words of Jesus, where Jesus talked about the fact that the bad stuff that's going on in our world, much of it, the bad stuff that's going on between people, between nations, the way people treat us, the way we treat other people, it actually comes from the inside of us. It actually comes from our own desires within, our very heart, our inner being, and then flows out and impacts the people around us. Jesus says quite profoundly, inside us, actually bad stuff lives. Out of our heart comes things like envy, greed, sexual immorality, anger, hatred, impurity, selfish desires, pride, slander, gossip. You see all these things around. Where do they come from? Why are these things present in our society, in my workplace, in my... Well, they come out of each and every one of us, Jesus says. They actually come out of the core of who we are, the heart. And so the problems with the world are not primarily out there, though there are big problems out there that do impact us. But primarily the problems are actually in here, in every person, without distinction, without exception. And last week we saw that actually signals a far greater problem. It actually signals a dislocation from God, a separation from our connection to God, which is our most fundamental problem. That's why every human is flawed. So if people are the problem, then how is it actually possible to change authority? Because you can't get bad authority out and good authority in, because you're just talking about people. Do you know? Tell you a secret. The people in charge of things are just like you. the people in charge are just like you. In fact, in some cases, they're not as good at stuff as you. And so you know all the flaws and problems and difficulties you have, and your, if you're honest with yourself, your propensity to slide towards the immoral, the wrong, the selfish, the self-focused, that's our leaders as well. They're exactly like we are. And so, in the end, you can't pull out all the bad and put in the good, because there's actually no good. We're all flawed. We've all got problems. And so whenever any of us gets in charge, we cause problems for other people as well. Now, you'd have to say there are some who have embraced the bad and the evil far more than others, haven't they? And so there are some rules that are far worse than others. And so there must be something to be said about seeking to remove those people from rule and getting others who are far less bad into those positions. You know, it's the divergent books again. No matter who gets in charge, it gets corrupt, it gets oppressive, it gets self-seeking by those in charge. And it's not just those in authority. It's everyone who the authorities are supposed to be serving, which makes the job heaps more complicated. We don't just have to fix the authorities, because the authorities are supposed to be serving all the people. And all the people have flaws and problems as well. And so you get all sorts of complex social problems, economic problems, political problems, relational problems. And so it becomes a very, very complex system in which to try to fix things and makes the authorities' job even harder. You think, is there a country anywhere in the world, in any time in all of human history, where you think, man, the government was nailing it? No problems. They fixed their society. That was just... Never in all of human history. It is just not possible, humanly speaking, to fix authority. Get out the bad, put in the good. Now, we can for a time. You can kick out a corrupt regime and replace it. You can have a revolution and replace it. But often what you find is the one who replaces is almost as bad as the one who has been replaced. So you can make change for a time, but ultimately things decay again and corruption sets in again. Because the problem, Jesus says, is... within every single person, out of the heart, come gossip and envy and greed and slander and hatred and malice and discord and jealousy and selfishness and sexual immorality and impurity and corruption. And so our authorities always take that shape just as we take that shape, because they've got people, they're people with hearts just like us. So get rid of bad authority and replace it with good. I think the evidence is overwhelmingly that's just not a feasible possibility. Doesn't mean we don't try, doesn't mean there won't be times where it needs to take place, and doesn't mean it won't make things better for a period of time, but ultimately, we can't fix the world by replacing bad with good authority, I believe. Which brings us to the second. Okay, well, let's just get rid of it. Let's just can authority. Fix it by getting rid of it altogether. If authority is the problem, why don't we just get rid of those in charge? We can't trust them. When anyone gets in charge, they ruin things, and it seems to ruin them. So let's not have anyone in charge. And rules. Don't you reckon there's just more rules all the time? Rules, rules, rules. They just keep making more laws about every single area of life. Occupational health and safety. Now, there's some good things, aren't there? Because you're trying to care for people and not... Yeah, but to write a risk assessment about people not tripping over something that's just sitting there, you know, we can all... There's rules governing every single facet of everyday life. Insurance, we used to just, you know, I was at a church and we used to go on a camp and I'd talk to the scouts and say, can we borrow your trailer with your canoes and just take them away? And at the end, we'd give them like a donation of a few life jackets, just say, thanks, guys. But after a while, it's like, oh, but do you have public liability? You got to work out all your insurances and there's legal things and there's... Oh, I don't think we'll bother anymore. There's laws and rules, and often they're put in place for good reasons, but they just seem to multiply. Parking meters. Can you imagine when parking meters come to the beaches of the Central Coast? You can't imagine it, can you? What will people do? People will smash them for a while, but eventually they'll win. Now, that seems terrible, doesn't it? To have to pay to go and park at the beach. Rules, rules, and it can feel like someone is in charge over every area of my life. And often you look at the people who are in charge and you think, man, I don't trust them. They seem corrupt. They're breaking the laws. Now, I don't want to have a go at the opposition leader in particular, but he's in charge, and yet now you find out that he's been charged with drink driving offences in his life. And it makes you go, I'm not having a go because we all do things wrong and I'm not making any political comment. But it does make you think, doesn't it? They're people just like us. Why do I have to sit under their laws when they don't seem to sit under the laws either? And the authorities make decisions on my behalf and I don't necessarily like them. You know, the government might choose to enter a war that I don't think we should enter. Or they choose not to enter a war and I think we should enter it. Or they make new laws and I don't think those laws are just laws for our society. I think they... Yeah. And so the government seems to work on our behalf, but not always in the way we'd want. And so don't you think, let's just get rid of it. Let's just throw it off. And we're Aussies, after all. You know, any ruler or government or authority that can send me to the other side of the world as punishment for stealing a loaf of bread to feed my starving family, I want nothing to do with authorities. Yeah, that's the Australian psyche, isn't it? We're convicts. And those big fat cats in England, the authorities, sent us over here for just trying to feed my family. We hate authorities. So why not get rid of them? Free from rules, free from laws, free from people telling me what to do. If authority is the problem with the world, let's can authority. Well, firstly, I'd have to say, it's actually not possible. As soon as you get a bunch of people together, they start to organise. And a leader arises or a group of leaders arise and they start to put in place structures so there can be protection and good governance and efficiency and effectiveness and all those sort of things. It's just a fact of life. Even the most anti-authority commune type situations, even if they don't call it leadership, you'll find that some sort of form of leadership will arise. Leadership always arises. People always band together and establish leadership. It's part of who we are. And if you find in any organisation or any society or any community there is a leadership vacuum, that vacuum will be filled. Usually by the person you don't want to fill it or the people you don't want to fill it, which is the most inefficient or the most despotic, and you get some sort of crazy joker in there. And so it's better to get on the front foot and try to get the right people in rather than just leaving a vacuum and see who floats to the surface. And the larger the group, the more necessary the authority is, the leadership structure is, to bring about order, structure, to protect us from each other, to protect everyone's interests, to stop anarchy. To have laws and people policing those laws and people punishing according to those laws actually brings restraint to lots of the evil behaviour that would otherwise take place in society that I and you and all of us would perpetrate against each other. We're restrained by the threat of authority over us and what would take place. So authority, if it is exercised well, is actually a very good thing. It brings productivity. It brings protection, particularly to the vulnerable. It restrains lots of evil and mistreatment of others. And so we can have this dream of a society where no authority, no constraints. Everyone's free to do what they want, just live and let live. But the reality is, firstly, it's not possible. And secondly, it's actually undesirable. Because people have this problem at their core. We don't live and let live. We're selfish. We actually mistreat each other. And without the restraining influences of authority and law, things actually spiral downwards rather than naturally spiraling upwards. And that's just, you can look at the world and see that that is the way things are. But you can also listen to the words of Jesus. And again, I'm struck by the fact that when Jesus speaks, it just makes so much sense of life. He explains very clearly why things are the way they are. Many, many years ago, there was that movie, The Beach. It's a pretty poor movie. I wouldn't go and watch it. But it's a group of people who, I think it's somewhere in Thailand, but they find paradise. They create a community where there is no one else there and it's this beautiful, idyllic location. And there's a small group of them and they're all the beautiful people, the free people, and it's going to be wonderful. And so they go about trying to set up this utopia with their own sort of laws and government, and it becomes mayhem and anarchy and chaos. I've probably said this before, but Thomas More wrote a book called Utopia. And you wonder, where do we get this word utopia? He wrote a book called Utopia, bringing together two Greek words quite intentionally. Ouk topos, utopia. No, topos, place. Utopia, no place. There's irony in the very name. There is no place, utopia. There is no idyllic society. You might have heard this before also. I think Andrew Heard shares this fairly frequently. Coral Island, a book written many, many years ago, just coming out of the Enlightenment era, about boys who are landed, you know, stranded on an island, and there's no outside influences, no authority, no restraining, and it's about how they go on to, it's just utopia. It just is a wonderful society that they create together. Because the theory back in those days was we are innately good. It's the influences from outside that corrupt and distort and damage us. But years later, the book The Lord of the Flies was written. Now, you've all read The Lord of the Flies, haven't you? Because you had to do it at school. You know, Piggy and the Conch and all that sort of stuff. Lord of the Flies was written after World War I and II. And so it's written as a response, quite consciously, to Coral Island, where the boys are stranded on a desert, on an island, and do they create the ideal, wonderful society? No. They end up killing each other. They end up becoming beasts and animals. They keep talking about this beast out there, which is really a stake with a pig's head on it. But the book actually shows that in the end, the beast is not out there. The beast is actually in here, in each and every one of us. And so there is no utopian world where you throw off all authority and you throw off all constraint and just let humans, innocent kids, you know, get back to their roots and everything will turn out okay. Get rid of authority? Not possible. And it would actually leave us in a far worse place than we are where we have authority. And anyway, is the problem just authority? Well, no, it's bad authority. That's the problem. And so it gets you thinking, if it were possible that there were a leader who would not be broken like me and not be selfish like me, a leader who is not immoral, a leader who did not have a heart out of which came envy and greed and immorality and pride and selfishness, then I think I'd be happy to sit under that sort of leader. If it were possible to have a leader who served others, you know, we call the Prime Minister for a reason. Prime, number one, minister, servant, the first servant, the one who's to serve all the people, serve the nation. If it were possible to have a leader who was the servant of all the people, who always put others before themselves, if it was possible to have a leader who led for the best interests of his or her people, if it were possible that there was a leader who wanted what was best for me so much that they were willing to sacrifice anything to get that for me and for the good of the people, man, I think I would follow a leader like that, don't you? I reckon I would follow an authority like that. I reckon that would be a good authority to sit under. Now, the problem is, in the human sphere, that just does not exist. We know in our experience, and Jesus confirms it in what he says. But here is where the Bible has something very, very radical to say, and it's in the passage that we read. So if you have your Bibles open, come back to John 10. If you don't have a Bible, you might want to listen on or look at someone nearby. Here we have the claim that there is actually an authority worth following. And Jesus is speaking here, and he's speaking to authorities. He's speaking to the leaders of his day, particularly the religious leaders. In verse 1 it says they're called the Pharisees. And he speaks in terms of sheep and shepherds, which is really weird for us. We don't talk about sheep and shepherds particularly much, but they're an agricultural society, and so they knew how sheep and shepherds work. The shepherd leads the sheep. Where the shepherd goes, the sheep follow. The shepherd calls them, they follow by name. The shepherd protects the sheep. He's a loving leader, a caring leader. He looks after them. If the wolf or the bear comes, he fights off the wolf or the bear. He lies in the gate in the sheep, you know, sheep folds that are out in place in the countryside so that no one can get into the sheep fold to damage the sheep. He leads them by, you know, good food, to clean water. The shepherd leads the sheep by loving, caring for, protecting, looking after the sheep. And so you get this idea of the leader, the followers, the loving lead. And so in the history of the nation of Israel, the history of the Jews, of whom Jesus was one, you get this idea applied to the leaders of Israel, which is quite a natural thing to do in their agricultural society. And so those who ruled this nation of Israel were called the shepherds, And the people were called the sheep. And the shepherds were supposed to lovingly rule, care for, protect, provide, look after, be for the best, look after the people like they were the sheep. And so there's this sense that all these leaders were shepherds, but there was a great shepherd over them. And that great shepherd was God himself. He was the chief shepherd, the good shepherd, the shepherd who ultimately cared for the nation of Israel. And so Jesus uses that language here, and let's just notice a few things about what Jesus has to say about sheep and shepherds, about authorities and people. The first thing that you notice is he is very, very aware that there's bad authority. Now, that's one of the things I love about Jesus and I love about the Bible, is that it doesn't paint this sugar-coated nonsense world. You know, it's not a glossed over religious sentimentality type. It's earthy, it's real, it tells you how things are, it's down to earth. And so what has taken place in the nation of Israel's history is there's always been bad shepherds, always been rulers and leaders who have ripped off the people, just like takes place today. And so in the nation of Israel, God had basically said through his prophet Ezekiel, and you can follow it up in Ezekiel 34 if you'd like later, that God was angry with the way that the shepherds had treated the sheep, the way the authorities had fleeced the sheep, had ceased to care for them, but had actually exploited them and ripped them off. And it actually said that one day, he, the great shepherd, will come and shepherd the sheep properly. The great authority, the great leader will come to his people and bring about an era of reign and rule where people are truly cared for, the vulnerable are looked after, and things are made right. And so you get that sense in the history of Israel, there's been bad shepherds. But here Jesus is saying it's still happening. It's still happening right in Jesus' day. He's speaking to the Pharisees, and he says things. Have a look at verse 5. He calls them the stranger's voice. You're not true shepherds, you leaders of Israel today. Verse 8, thieves and robbers. You're ripping off and stealing the sheep, and you're about yourselves and not about God's purposes and the needs of these people. Verse 10, the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. So their motive is not for the life and health of the sheep, but to do damage to the sheep and good to themselves. Verse 12, you're the hired hand. You're not really the real shepherd. No, and when trouble comes, the hired hand runs away because they've got no loving connection to the sheep. That's not what a good leader is like. So Jesus is looking at the leaders of his day, the authorities of the nation of Israel, and he's saying to you, you are not good shepherds. You are bad shepherds. You're not caring for the sheep. And so Jesus recognizes that this is an endemic problem. You know, authority is corrupted, and he sees it taking place here. But what we find in Jesus is there's actually a solution. And here's where we see a solution, not just for them, but for us today. And I think it's the answer to our question. There is a solution because way back when God had made the promise about how he was going to fix things, the promise was he's going to come. He's going to fix things. He's going to lead in such a way where people are looked after and not exploited. He is going to make things right. And here, what we found in this book, John's Gospel. Now, John was a mate of Jesus. John was one of Jesus' three best mates, walked around with Jesus, saw everything Jesus did. He's written it down. What we have here is an eyewitness account of the life of Jesus. So John, in this account, has spoken about Jesus in a way, recording Jesus doing incredible things, miracles that only God could do, speaking in ways that only God could speak. And so Jesus turns up doing these incredible things. And here Jesus says, have a look at verse 11, something incredible, which may not at first glance look incredible, but it is. Verse 11, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. Now, if you had read the Old Testament, if you're a Jew, if you're part of the nation of Israel, you're remembering God's the good shepherd. God's the great shepherd who's going to come and fix things up and stop exploitation. And yet Jesus is here and he says, you know what? I am the good shepherd. I'm the good and great shepherd that you have been waiting for all these years. I'm the one who's going to make things right. I'm the one promised who is going to bring proper leadership to all my people, proper authority to God's people. I'm the one who's going to bring real care and protection and give life. And remember, Who was promised hundreds and hundreds of years before in Ezekiel would come? God. Jesus is effectively here saying, I am God, come amongst my people to make things right. Now, if you're not familiar with these things, that might be an astounding, this is an astounding claim. Jesus doesn't claim to be just some sort of moral teacher or a good person or have some wise words to say or a guru. He claims to be the God of the universe come in the very flesh in order to fix things, in order to make things right. See, what is the solution to the woes of bad authority and exploitation and corruption? The only solution is that God would come and establish his kingdom and rule in such a way where he actually loves and cares for and looks after his people. And Jesus is saying in these words, it's me. That day has come. I am God and I have come to lead my people. And Jesus then goes on to make clear, and I am not like any authority that you have ever seen. Did you see it in those words in verse 11? I am the good shepherd. I'm the perfectly good authority. How do you know he's good? Well, he goes on in verse 11. He says, I lay down my life for you. Have a look at verse 11. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand, cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this pen. I must bring them in also. They too will listen to my voice and there will be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, authority to take it up again. This command I receive from my Father. How do you know Jesus is a good shepherd? Well, what he says here is, I'm the shepherd who has come to actually give my life for your good, to sacrifice anything for the good of my people. And this is not metaphorical, this is not figurative language, this is actually, he has come to die in order to do good for people. What sort of leadership is that? A leader, an authority, who wants the good of his people so much that he would actually die and sacrifice himself for them. Now imagine our country's greatest problem was economic. We have some economic problems, but I don't think it's probably our greatest problem. But imagine it was. Imagine you could fix everything by fixing the economy. We were just in so much debt and our economy was really stuffed. You know? But imagine that, and this is highly unfeasible, but imagine there was a way to fix our economy if one person, if the leader of our nation would sacrifice all their wealth, everything they owned, all their assets, everything they owned, if they gave up all their wealth, it would actually cancel the debt and fix everything for the entire nation. Now, if Tony Abbott did that, gave up everything, a bit of a laugh at that. If Tony Abbott gave up everything, all his stuff, and it wasn't a political stunt, there wasn't some way to get it back around the back, no, he really seriously gave up everything and became bankrupt in order to bring back, fix up the economy for the whole nation. Now, wow, how would you feel about a guy like Tony Abbott? It'd do a lot to think, man, I could trust someone like that. I reckon I could follow someone like that. There's lots of other factors as well. You're in the army. You step on a mine. It's in the midst of a firefight. There's no luxury of going getting the bomb squad. And your commanding officer runs, dives, pushes you out of the way, lands on the bomb, is killed. What sort of leader is that? The leader that wants my best, my good. How would you feel about a leader like that? I can trust a leader like that. Jesus says our greatest problem as a country, our greatest problem as every individual is alienation from the living God, which is seen in the way that we treat each other, mistreat each other, the brokenness of our lives that we've been talking about. And the cost of fixing that is actually death. And the only way to fix it is to have God, the great leader, God himself, come and lay down his life for us. That is the only thing that is enough to pay that debt, to fix that problem for all of humanity, for all who will trust. And Jesus, God's son, is the one who paid that cost. Now, what sort of leader is that? Verse 10, it says, the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and life to the full. This leader has come to sacrifice everything and die. and after that to rise again, but he truly goes through death and experiences the torment of death and hell himself, so that he might win us life, life to the full, real life, again connected to the living God for now and for all eternity. And because Jesus is risen, it means he's a leader who is alive today, a leader who we can continue to follow. And so Jesus wants to make clear, I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. I don't know if you've seen the Lego movie. Lego movie is a great movie. It's intense. Everything's going on. Lego's building all around and it's fun and entertaining. The kids love it. But I don't know if you noticed the subplot. They spoke a little bit about this at Summerfest, the sub-themes that are going on in there. There's Lord Business, you know, the evil dictator, really, of the Lego world. And he wants to glue everything up. He wants everything to function the way he wants it to, and he doesn't want people to be creative and do their own thing and get off track. And, you know, the theme song, everything is awesome. Yeah. Everything is awesome, and one of the lines is, everything is awesome when you're living our dream, when you're living Lord Business's dream. But as the movie goes on, what you realise is what's going on in the Lego world is actually a picture of what's going on in a larger reality. Lord Business represents the dad, and there's the kid who's never allowed to play with any of the dad's Lego. It's all these signs around it. Don't touch, keep your hands off, keep away. The dad will not let his kid play with all this stuff. The kid just wants to be creative and break things apart and make new stuff, but the dad's got the city set up in exactly the way he wants it. He doesn't want his kid to touch it. And they keep calling the dad the man upstairs, because it's down in the basement where the things are, the man upstairs, the creator. There's this creator out there, this evil creator who keeps saying, look, there's rules, keep your hands off, don't touch, don't be creative, don't do anything that's going to be fun. And don't you see the subtext that's behind all that? Yeah, the real problem is there's this God out there, this creator, this man upstairs, and he keeps making all these rules and constraints and trying to take the fun out of life. And it would be better if he'd just get out of the way and let us be free and let us be happy. Now, is that reading too much into it? I don't think so. But is that what God is really like? You hear that voice. You hear that voice among some in our community, but is that what God is really like? Well, here, Jesus gives us a picture of God he's really like. He says, no, he is the loving leader who has come amongst us as a man, who has suffered just like we suffered, who has walked in our very footsteps and has walked to the cross and died and experienced hell itself to draw us back into relationship with living God for now and eternity, to give us real life and real freedom. Now, can you follow an authority like that? Is there a good authority out there that is really, truly worth following? Because I don't know if you notice that that's what Jesus calls us to do. And here's where the challenge is embedded in what Jesus says. Right throughout, Jesus keeps saying, my sheep listen to me. The sheep hear the voice of the shepherd and follow. The sheep hear, voice, follow, all those things right throughout the passage are all tied together. See, not everyone naturally is under the good shepherd. Jesus is reconnected back to God. It is about listening to the voice of the shepherd and following him. And Jesus' voice is his words as recorded by eyewitnesses in the New Testament, in the Bible here. And so those who come under Jesus' loving leadership, come under his loving leadership by listening to his voice, by saying, I believe what you say, Jesus, and I'm going to live with my life shaped by what you say, Jesus. And so it's a challenge. Whether we will trust Jesus to lead us. Now, it's humbling, isn't it? Coming under any leadership is humbling. But to come fully under the leadership of Jesus as God, as our ruler, now that's a humbling and difficult thing to do. But he calls for us to do that by listening to his words and living with a life shaped around them, believing them and living a life shaped around them. But remember, he's the good shepherd. He's the good shepherd. He's the one who has loved you so much that he's actually laid down his life for you. So there you go. There's an authority problem that needs fixing, and I don't think any of us disagree with that. How do you do it? Take out the bad, replace it with the good? Can't. Because it's really a people problem. We're all broken, we're all flawed. The best of people are people at best. Okay, get rid of it. Throw it off. get rid of it altogether. It's not possible. We always organize. We always put people in place in leadership. Leadership will always arise. There will always be authority. Also, it's not desirable to throw it off completely because authority is a good thing, especially when exercised well. Even when not, it can be helpful. Or do we listen to God's answer? There is a solution. There is a good authority. There is a good leader. It is God, the Son, who has come to us, who brings real freedom, who brings real life, who died and rose again to do it, which shows he is good. And the challenge that he leaves us with is, will you listen to my voice? Will you believe it? Will you shape your life around it? Will you listen to him?